of losing money in the stock market roller coaster? Frustrated with the government taxing you into oblivion? Worried about inflation? How do you prepare for so many financial uncertainties? Welcome to the show that will help you develop your game plan. The Financial Quarterback with Josh Jelinski. Josh is a noted financial advisor and president of the Jelinski Advisory Group, and he's here to answer your questions. Call into the show at 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Now, let's kick off your financial future. Here's Josh Jelinski.
One. Hi, everybody. This is Josh Jelinski, the Financial Quarterback, and we are with Rock Your Retirement and CertifiedMedicareAgents.com's Kathy Klein. So, Kathy, you spent 25 years in the business. Describe your origin story. What brought you to Rock Your Retirement?
Well, I was a financial advisor, right? And I was trying to figure out whether I wanted to retire or not. And I thought, well, you know what? Why don't I do a podcast about that? And I'll bring in guests that can talk about things that are non-financial related. I didn't want to talk about money at all because at the time I was a financial advisor and that would have caused some compliance issues. And I didn't want to have to get everything that I talked about approved through compliance. So I just decided to talk about things that were not financial and not talk about what I did for a living on the show. And through that, it was really interesting because a few years later, my husband was diagnosed with cancer. And going back, having had all of those guests on my show was really helpful. And then in 2020, I changed the format of the show to where I followed a pre-retiree who was going to retire in 6 months. And then she retired, and then we followed her, and then she started traveling around in her RV, so I started working with another pre-retiree, and now she's back, and she is now what I consider my co-host, although she's not officially a co-host, and it's just been a wild ride. You know, the show has changed over the years, and I originally considered it to be kind of like an encyclopedia of non-financial things that you needed to know before you retired. And I'm so glad that I did it.
And is that Barbara or Betsy? Because I'm on your blog.
Barbara Mock. Betsy. So Barbara Mock is the original pre-retiree. And then Betsy did it for 6 or 8 months. And now Barbara's back on the show.
And so you take...
And we'll probably check in with Betsy.
So that's great. I mean, I would love to do that. I wish I would have done that years, because there are certain people that are real characters and they come in your life and they tell you lessons.
Hey, it's not too late. Josh, it's not too late. If you can find a pre-retiree that will do it, it is so fun to see what they're thinking about before they retire and then through retirement. And then after retirement, I'm actually looking for somebody who's single who can do that with me, because both people that I've had on the show as pre-retirees have both been married.
Oh, I can get you somebody, maybe.
And both of them have pensions.
I can get you somebody.
Yeah, or you could do it on your own show. It's really fun to do that. You have to find the right person, though, because not everybody wants to share. And I ask people to share their deep most, you know, their innermost thoughts, and not everybody wants to do that. So, your show's a little bit different than mine.
Yeah, I read about sex and retirement and all these other things that I want to know about. But and we'll get to some of these more salacious issues with retirement. So, tell me more about you. How many kids you have? Are you married? Are you single? Just because I'm sure that informs what you do.
It does. I'm married. I've been married for 15 years. I was a late married person. You know, I didn't get married until I was in my 40s, but I did have relationships before then. No children. My husband doesn't have children either. And my husband is a lot older than me. He's 21 years older than me. He just turned 80 yesterday. And it's different being married to somebody with that big of an age gap. But when we first got married, we looked like we were the same age. Nobody suspected that we were of different age. In fact, yesterday at his birthday party, one of the guests was commenting on how young he still looks. But he did go through chemotherapy. He did go through chemotherapy a few years ago, and that did age him. And now he's struggling with Parkinson's as well. But we walk our lives together, and you know, we sometimes talk about things on the show that we're struggling, that I'm struggling with. But in general, it's been a wonderful life, and I've been very blessed. So yeah, that's me. And then in 2014, I started working with Medicare. And the reason I started working with Medicare was, and your clients probably get the same thing. You know, my husband got this 4-inch stack of Medicare mail, and I was still a financial planner at the time. And he said, well, what should I do? And I said, I don't know anything about Medicare. Talk to an expert. Although I could have sold him a Medicare supplement plan. So anyway, he had somebody come to the house, sell him a plan. And then when he asked him, he said, the insurance agent said, do you take any drugs? And my husband said, no. And the insurance agent said, well, then you don't need a drug plan. And he left. And 5 years later, and this is going to be an interesting but unrelated, my dad had Parkinson's. And I was at my dad's house. And I noticed all of the medications lined up. And I said to my stepmother, how much do all these medications cost? And she said, well, if we didn't have our plan through my job, it'd probably be about $5,000 a month. And I thought, oh my gosh, we did a great retirement plan because I was a financial advisor, but I wasn't planning for $60,000 a year in drug costs. And so that's when I came back home and I started researching Medicare. And I found it to be super confusing. And I have a degree in financial services. And I thought, well, gosh, if I find this to be confusing, what about my clients? And that's when I started working with Medicare. And I don't market for Medicare anymore. I mean, I take clients by referral, but I started this referral website called CertifiedMedicareAgents.com, where consumers can come and find qualified insurance agents to help them with Medicare, because I find that it is a very, very confusing and complicated topic. I don't think it should be that confusing and complicated, but that's what I do now. So I'm partially retired. I have this podcast and I have this directory site that I
You're very fascinating. I'm really into this. So we're going to talk about what it was like just kind of being a woman in financial services for 25 years, and women were not the norm. I do want to learn about that. I've heard all kinds of horror stories from some of the veterans in the 80s and 90s. And being a woman in the 80s and 90s in the financial industry was like being in a frat house, you know, from what I hear. And then I want to hear about that. I want to hear about cancer, Parkinson's, those things, if you don't mind sharing. Because the one thing that I've helping so many clients as they age is Parkinson's, cancer, all of these horrible things are just, my wife is someone who doesn't like to speak anything bad into existence, you know? So she doesn't like to talk about anything. I mean, she'll pray and she'll, you know, but I do think you have to plan for those things.
One of the things that I did good when we first got married, so I was a financial advisor. I started just selling TSAs, 403B plans, and 1990 was when I went into the industry. And yeah, it was very few women at the time, a lot more women now. I was an MDRT qualifier, I think starting in, I forget what the first year was that I qualified, but I went in and there were thousands of people and maybe 100 women. It was so much different than it is now. I'm so glad that there are women in this industry now because it's needed. It's needed for different genders, different colors, different backgrounds of people to help people with finances. But I don't know, it's been a wild ride. But as far as one of the best things that I did, and you can't really do this anymore. My company had a, not my broker dealer, but the company that I sort of went in as the 401k specialist for this company that did property casualty. And the owner of the company wanted to put in a long-term care plan. And I think it was because he saw himself failing a little bit. And at the time, if you had a group long-term care plan, the questions were a lot less questions than if you bought your own policy. And so I bought that policy when I was, I don't know, 38, 39, 40. And then when I married my husband, I added him onto it immediately. And so we have a policy that you can't buy anymore. And when I turned 50, my husband said, "Why are we paying for this policy? We, you know, it's," I was paying like $700 a year for myself and like $2,600 for him. And remember, he's 20 years older than me. And I said, no, we're going to keep that policy. And then a couple of years ago, they doubled it in price. They increased the price by 90%. And I said, I will happily pay because I have an unlimited benefit. The only thing that I pray is that the company itself doesn't go out of business, you know, because of that's, there's the reason why they doubled our premium, because people are using it. And when I talked to, I was talking to somebody the other day and she called me up and she said, "What other insurance do I need? Do I need cancer policies? Do I need hospital indemnity? Do I need this? Do I need that?" And I said, "Seriously, the only policy that I really think you need is one you probably can't afford, and that's a long-term care policy." And she said, "Yeah, I've looked into those and they're really expensive." And I said, "Yeah, but chances are we're going to need it." And when I first started working with long-term care, I don't sell these policies. I think it was 2 out of 5 people are going to need it. And now that we're living longer, you probably know the numbers more than I do, Josh. Do you know what the numbers are now?
To me, now they say 1 out of 3, but I think it's more like 1 out of 2. And I'm thinking of a dear couple that I know. The woman's like another mother to me. She's a sweetheart. And the father is a sweetheart. And I made them buy, because I foresaw this long-term care increase back when Conseco went under and there was all these problems. And I said, you know, it was when they came out with, they said they have it now, but it was more of a permanent life insurance policy with a long-term care benefit on the side. So I said, "You really have to get this." And their premium was like 20 grand a year. It was not cheap for the two of them, but they had, you know, $4 million net worth. You know, it was, you know, the people complain about that, but it would have covered them to up to $2 million of expenses, something like, it was a very nice policy. And they canceled it a year or two before his Parkinson's diagnosis. And now he has dementia, and now they have to spend all kinds of money on this. This is a new crusade that I'm taking up. Medicaid trust attorneys in our area. We were interviewing 4 people for this dear woman. They would charge her 17 grand, 30 grand, just to do like for what was me, you know, me like basic trust work. You know, I could go to my local attorney and they might do it for $1,500, but she's in New York. And I'm saying, we'll call her Jane. Jane, it's not her name. How much is this costing you to take care of your husband? And this is floors me because I'm hearing these numbers. She has 20 grand a month.
It's expensive. You know, if you need caregivers, it's expensive, and the drugs can be expensive. And remember, Medicare has a donut hole when it comes to drugs. And right now, thank goodness, we are not on expensive drugs yet. But that could happen in the future, and it could also happen for his cancer, which is in remission. But, you know, cancer comes back. You know, people that have cancer know this. And we made a lot of lifestyle changes. One of the things that you need to know about Parkinson's is that the drugs don't delay the spread. It doesn't delay it. All it does is covers up the symptoms of Parkinson's. The only thing, and I'm not a medical doctor, so if you're listening to this, please verify anything with your doctor or pharmacist. You know, don't take anything that Josh and I say to be medical advice. But we've been told that the only thing that slows down Parkinson's is physical activity. And then there's two things that have been proven, and that is boxing and dance, aerobic dance. Hmm. And so my husband hates to do any type of aerobics, but as his wife, we dance every day for 30 minutes. I used to do a program called Beachbody on Demand.
Oh yeah, I love that.
And they kept raising their prices.
I know, it's so annoying. It used to be the best deal on earth.
It was $99 a year when I first signed up for it. And I love the music. And now the music that I used to listen to, they've deleted that music. The people are still there, but it's a different music that I don't like. And so I changed to a program called Body Groove. And my husband can do it. And it's kind of a jazzy kind of thing that you pretty much do your own thing. They're there to lead you, but you don't have to do exactly, like, you don't have to do the exact moves. Like if they're doing this, you don't have to do that. You can do whatever. And he can follow along. He likes it. And so that's my now go-to program. And it's about, I think, $100 a year. I was able to get a lifetime deal on it. I don't think the deal that I have is available anymore. I think if you do the lifetime, it's around $700. But I really like the people in that program. And it's helping us. It's helping stave that Parkinson's off. I mean, it's still progressing, but the doctor saw him a couple of days ago and she said he looks better now than he did in the last visit. So there are things that you can do that are not necessarily taking drugs. You know, in any condition that you have. When he had the cancer, he had one doctor diagnosed, said he had 3.5 years to live. The other doctor said 5. And he's lived well beyond both of what those doctors said. We changed our diet. We changed our lifestyle. And it was funny because everyone said, don't change your diet. It's too stressful right now to change your diet. Just do the chemotherapy. And we said, you know what? We want to feel, even if it didn't do anything, we wanted to feel like we were doing something to, you know what I mean? And so we did.
I can't believe they told you that. You know how you get like private equity pitches and stuff when you were a broker? I had pitches 7 years ago, and this reaffirms. So there are clinical trials now. Again, not medical advice, but I just know this because, okay, this buddy, you know, John Malden introduced me to this guy who introduced me to this guy, and Steve Blumenthal introduced me to, you know, these guys in the industry. I didn't really introduce clients to it, but they were doing clinical trials linking the gut, like the good bacteria, the bad bacteria, the gut microbiome. They're specifically linking that with Parkinson's. Yeah. And these are clinical trials that they can't tell you because of insider trading. But the only reason I know them is because it was like this private placement. I don't really do those for clients because I find that a lot of them don't end up well. But I listened to the pitch because I was like, whoa, we've developed. And I had a client who totally unrelated. He had dementia. And I think he had Parkinson's before he had dementia. He was in one of these clinical trials. And the guy would get lost going to our office. And we had to bring in his wife. And we'd call her and say, we really can't do these meetings anymore. He's compromised. He got better. Like, they reversed whatever he had. We didn't know, like, well, what was the company? What was the clinical trial? And they didn't even tell her because of insider trading rules. But there's stuff out there that we don't even know about that they're testing from even a clinical view. So I find that a lot of those things with diet work, but it's not, you know, clinically proven.
Right. Is it really going to hurt you?
Yeah, it's like,
is it going to hurt you? Now, I have been diet. And by the way, the things that I talk about for my husband, he has a blog. He hasn't written it in a while, but I just want you to know that I'm not breaking any HIPAA rules because he's made it public on his own. But as far as me, I've been diagnosed, and I'm only 58, and I've been diagnosed with osteoporosis, not just osteopenia, but osteoporosis on my left hip. And so I'm doing a lot of research, and that is also related to gut health, that there are so many things that have to do with your gut. And I know this is way beyond the scope of this, of your podcast, but it does have to do with how well we live in retirement, because it isn't all about money. And a lot of times things that we've done in the past catch up to us, you know, as we age, the things catch up. But some things can be reversed. Some things can be slowed down. And so that's what I'm trying right now, is to slow this down or maybe reverse my bone loss that I've had because of some things that I did when I was younger.
My mother had osteopenia, and I swear it was because she drank Diet Coke like could water. And
it could be. Yeah.
You know, because now they then did a trial that said, you know, probably sponsored by Coke, that it doesn't cause that.
So, no. But, hey, we've all seen the videos of the nail being dissolved in Coke, remember?
Yeah.
I think you're a little bit younger than me, but when I was younger, we would always see these.
Oh yeah.
Put a nail in a glass of Coke and it'll be gone in 2 weeks or something like that.
It's crazy what these things do. But that's, I think, where people get consumed with money in retirement. I was talking to a guy the other day. Guy has a multi-million dollar portfolio. He makes bad decisions because he's trading at the wrong time. Smart guy. He can sort of be a do-it-yourselfer. And most of our RIA, I own a registered investment advisory firm, most of our RIA is former do-it-yourselfers who just, because of the non-financial, they're like, if they're really honest with themselves, the stress of the portfolio is eating them away. And you know, that's probably why you retired.
Financial planning, yes.
It's a big stress to have the weight of portfolios on your shoulder. And I particularly like that. I like get off on the adrenaline. But, you know, I've had to watch what I've eat. I have to watch what I eat since I was like 28, because it was catching up on me at like 32. At all these tests, and I felt different. But I think the non-financial informs the financial. Because people will have a choice. Do you want to work? Any of the people don't have to work with us. Do you want to work with a professional that you can release some pressure with? And I told the guy, and he trusts us with about half of his portfolio. But I said, there will come a time where you just want to go on cruises, or you just want to like not worry about this. And wouldn't you rather guide us in a quarterly meeting than, you know, have to trade Tesla, you know, or trade Google, or buy this ETF or this index fund? And it really is the non-financial gets, because there used to be, probably when you were around in the industry, there's the Vanguardites and the Fidelityites, and they don't really mix with the people who manage money for a living.
Right.
And what I found deep down, those people that probably listen to your podcast who are do-it-yourselfers, that's why they like podcasts, they like free information. Deep down, they know they should release it. They just don't really trust anyone.
I don't know. I think most of the people that listen to my podcast use financial advisors because, oh, wow. Remember, we don't talk about money.
That's funny.
You know, my podcast assumes that you've already done the financial part. You know, we just assume that. And I get pitched all the time of financial advisors that want to come onto the show. And I'm like, well, we don't talk about that stuff on the show. We don't talk about money. We just assume that they already have that part taken care of, right? So
I like that.
But yeah, you know, I think that most people that listen to podcasts, period, already have done some financial planning. Because to have a podcast, that means you have to have either an iPhone or an Android. So, and you know, you've got to have technology, right? So you've got to have a certain amount of income. And they've done studies. People that listen to podcasts are in a higher income range than people that don't.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I just assume that anybody who listens to a podcast already has done some financial planning, either on their own or through a financial advisor. But it's a great way. I mean, so many people, like the Rocky Retirement Show has had, I don't know, depending on which program I look at, about 2 million downloads.
Wow.
Now that's since 2016.
Maybe it seems like prices can't get much higher, or that the stock market is headed for bear territory, or maybe you're worried about another great recession. Josh Jelinski, the financial quarterback, can help you protect your family's financial future in times like these. Call 888-988-5674 to take advantage of Josh's 27-point plan to achieve financial health. And when you call, you'll receive a free copy of Josh's book, Retirement Reality Check. Call 888-988-5674 to receive your free copy of Retirement Reality Check.
So as I'm thinking about your topics, let's talk non-financial tips for people getting ready for retirement or in retirement. Medicare, since you're a Medicare expert of some sort, what when I have all these Medicare experts on, they all say go with G. Is that so? To me, I simplify everything. So I go, Medicare is G. Unless you're broke, then do the Medicare Advantage. Would you agree with that or not agree with that? And explain what G is first for people who don't know what that is.
Well, I think before you can explain what G is, you need to explain the top part. So I have a video and your listeners can go and watch the video. They can go to certifiedmedicareagents.com/MMD. That's Mary David. And this video explains how much you would have to pay if all you had was original Medicare, how much you would have to, what Medicare Advantage is, the pros and cons of Medicare Advantage, and the pros and cons of Medicare Supplement. That's what a Plan G is. A Plan G is a Medicare Supplement. And when you have Medicare Advantage, it gives you additional benefits. And I know wealthy people that are on a Medicare Advantage plan.
No, I have clients who love Medicare Advantage. They say, you know, hey, if they go to Sloan Kettering with it, they go to the top hospitals in New York, New Jersey. Why is there then, because I've had some of these Medicare people on, why do they all seem to gravitate to G over Medicare Advantage? And what would be the benefits of Advantage over G?
Medicare Advantage is privatized Medicare. And so it can provide additional benefits on top of what Medicare covers. So a lot of the reason why a lot of people will choose Medicare Advantage over a Plan G is because Medicare Advantage is going to provide dental coverage, it's going to provide vision coverage usually, and it's going to provide drug plan coverage in addition to some other things. But Plan G is going to cost your clients a monthly premium, and they're going to have to buy a drug plan on top of that. And so a lot of people, especially if they're not going to the doctor, they don't want to pay $150 a month for something that they're not using, right? So they feel that it's a good, wise decision to go with Medicare Advantage, which oftentimes has a zero premium, right? I like to let the client choose which way do they want to go. And sometimes they'll choose Medicare Advantage, but the reason why some of the financial experts say go with Plan G is because when you have original Medicare, there's no pre-authorization in most cases. Sometimes you'll have pre-authorization, but it's not required by the insurance company. It's required by Medicare. For example, there is an iLift that you can get, and the iLift Medicare will require that your doctor jump through some hoops to get that iLift. And why is that?
Like a facelift to look younger? I'm seeing...
Yes, it does make you look younger. And that's why Medicare makes your doctor jump through these pre-authorization hoops, because if Medicare just covered it, everybody would go and get it. And it would cost the country millions of dollars. But most services, like if your doctor thinks you need an MRI, if you have original Medicare, you're probably going to be able to get it. If you have a Medicare Advantage plan, your doctor's probably going to need to get that pre-authorized. And so that's why a lot of financial advisors or a lot of Medicare experts say, just go with the Plan G if you can afford it. Because if you don't, in the future, if you decide that you want to go with Plan G or another Medicare supplement plan, you might not be able to. Because after your first 6 months of being on Part B, which is Medicare, the insurance companies can discriminate against you and say, no, you need shoulder surgery, we're not going to take you. No, you have Parkinson's, we're not going to take you. And so that's why your Medicare experts are saying, just go with Plan G if you can afford it. The issue is that with the law that was passed, and I can't think of the name of it, but it went into effect. Standalone drug plans are probably going to get more and more expensive over
the
course of the
next couple of years. Like the No Surprises Act, that
one? It wasn't called No Surprises. It's called, I'll think of it in a minute. But basically, it was a law that is eliminating the donut hole or also creating a cap on Medicare drug plan spending. And it works a lot better with Medicare Advantage plans than it does with Medicare standalone drug plans. And recently, we've already seen one carrier leave the market this week. Mutual of Omaha seems to be leaving that Medicare drug plan market. And so I think that you're going to see drug plans increase in price over the next few years, which will then in effect make Medicare supplement plans less affordable because you need to have both. And so I'm hoping that the government will reimburse these drug plans as much as they're reimbursing the Medicare Advantage plans for drugs. And right now they're not. And in my opinion, it's not fair. And so it makes the companies not want to do the drug plans.
So you're the first Medicare expert to kind of bring that up. We have a lot of them throughout the years. So
I bet you. Well, this is a new law too, and I I'm getting older, so sometimes I have these brain things where I can't remember the name of things. You know, like I have to describe.
Chair.
That's it. The thing you sit on, and I'm having that same issue right now with the name of this law. But I'll email it to you later.
I do that every day.
Put it in the show notes.
It means you have a lot on your mind.
Exactly.
And so on to the non-financial stuff. So Medicare, people have to kind of be alerted. What other things should people do 5 years from retirement or people in retirement? I've noticed a life cycle too. I'm kind of throwing a lot out at you. But a strange thing I've noticed, because I've been helping people for years, people change about 12 to 14 years into retirement too. It's almost sad.
You've got the go-go years, the slow-go years, and the no-go years, right?
Yeah. But even
right after retirement, you want to do a lot of things. Then you slow down and then you just want to stay home.
And I don't know, is there some scientific thing to the 14 years, 12 to 14 years? Because it's just me observing people is that 12 to 14 years into retirement, people tend to change. I don't know why.
I haven't noticed any like scientific studies on that or anything, but I can tell you that the things that I tell my listeners to look out for, and this is what I have in the Baby Boomers 30-Day Journal, and you can get this on Amazon. I think it's like 10 bucks. Basically, there are six things that I tell my listeners to look for. I don't know if you can see that or not, but one is the spiritual aspects. Do you have your spiritual life in order? Do you need to work on that? The second is your significant other, if you have one. That is a big part of your financial, you know, your retirement life. In fact, a lot of insurance companies will give you a discount if you live with somebody, even if you are not married. So we are social beings. Have you heard of the blue zones?
Yes. I want to move and to a one, lot of but my these, wife won't let me.
What? Irvine, California is one of the blue zones. So that's in the United States. But these blue zones tend to have strong social ties. It's not just about what they eat. And so, yes, yeah, so the significant other, friendships, very, very important in retirement. Your purpose in life, because what happens, Josh, when you retire, you lose your identity. And this is one of the reasons why I probably haven't fully retired yet. But your purpose in life, you have to have one, even if you're not working. Figure out what that purpose in life is. And if that means you're going to volunteer for something, or you're going to go on a mission with your church, or build Habitat for Habitat houses, or whatever that purpose is, we all, as you know, human beings, need to have a purpose in life. And then your family, different from your significant other, different from your friends, your family, you need to have that family. You know, that's a piece of whether or not your retirement is going to be good. And the last but not least is your health. Your health is a big, big part of your retirement. And that 14 years could have to do with your health. People slow down, your body changes.
I think the spiritual is really everything. It all stems from that first. If I'm dealing with a client and they have a strong relationship with God and the Lord, or some other, you know, belief system that transcends themselves, they tend to live longer, have more joy, have more peace in the midst of trial. Totally. And families, I've even found, as the world is getting stranger.
Yes, it is.
Certain clients, you know, even we've had Jewish clients who I love because I studied the Tanakh. I have a master's degree in the Bible. And
I didn't know that. That's very interesting.
Read biblical Hebrew, and my kids' names are Moses and Judah and Jah. So a lot of people think I'm Jewish. I take that as a compliment, but I just couldn't make a living because I wasn't a rabbi. So I studied, I read Hebrew in the original languages. So I've seen Jewish clients, with all the uncertainty in the world, they're getting deeper into their faith. Christian clients getting deeper into their faith. As the world is getting more crazy, and I think a lot of it too is, sometimes I go to clients and they're worried every day about gold or Bitcoin or this. I don't know if you're hearing this from your podcast listeners. People are so, every day is some irrational thing. So I came up with what I call I got this from a book, so I'm not like the suburban survivalist. So I'll have somebody in. I had it Monday. Guy calls me up. Josh, I'm really worried about gold. I'm worried about Bitcoin. I'm worried about this. I go, Bob, that's not his name. Bob, you have $600,000 in gold or Bitcoin between the two. I go, if the dollar crashes, you'll be the richest guy in your town. You're fine. But he literally, his wife was in surgery and had to stop everything. And it does help me to say, hey, you know, Do you have faith? Do you trust that things will work out? Do you trust God? And in some ways, like, if the world is that bad, like, Lord, take me now. You know, people and those things, the spiritual things, and just trusting God matters to quality of life when people retire more than anything.
But just remember, God never promised that you could be rich. God promises to take care of your needs, and you don't need an iPhone. You don't need a car. You don't, you know, there are very few things that we actually need, but there are lots and lots of things that we want. And that's part of my problem. I mean, my needs are taken care of, but I want to fly first class. I want to go on cruises. These are not things promised by God, right? God True. Never said, yeah, Kathy, I'm going to make sure that your want to fly first class is going to be taken care of. So yeah, I mean, I can see both sides. You know, I, among other people, are like, okay, well, do I have enough? And the problem is, what is enough? What is enough? We live in America, the United States, and our culture is nothing is ever enough. We always want more. And that's part of our problem, right? We just want more. We don't know how much is enough. We are not, our culture doesn't let us know that we have enough. And there are other cultures that are poor, poor, poor cultures, and they are way happier than we are in general. And why is that? It's because I think that they are happy with what they have, you know, even though they probably don't have enough. But their culture is that they are happy. Does that make sense, Josh?
Yeah, that they're content.
Yes, that's the word. They're content.
They have a certain rhythm of life.
That's right.
Where they just subsist. You know, I'm going to eat a little bit of this. I'm going to do a little of this.
And we're not content.
I like to go to Hawaii. It's not exactly that way, but the more of the local customs in Hawaii are more, I mean, yeah, they live in paradise, but there's a rhythm. They tend to not pig out. You know, they'll have a little of this, they'll have a little of this, you know, that they don't. Also, if you go to those cultures too, they don't do low carb diets. They don't do these strange things, keto, you know, although I'm not against that. I'm just saying, you know, they'll have a little sweet potato. They'll have some taro. Love some fit, you know. It's just they'll have a little sweet thing too, or like you go to France, they'll have a biscuit, you know. They'll have a, but it's like this internal moderation that we don't have. I really don't have it. So that's good.
We both live in the U.S., right? It's hard for us because our culture says we want more.
And my wife, for example, is the what I love about my wife. Talk about your husband. She is so non-money motivated. But when it comes to the kids for Christmas or gifts or food, you know, there will be no dollar amount for that.
Right.
And, yeah. But like she doesn't need handbags or any, you know, one day I was like, oh, should we fly first class to go to Hawaii? It'd be nice. You know, No, it's a waste of money. You know, she's more just like old school that way. But with the kids, it's like, you know, we have to buy organic food. They've been bathed in buttermilk ever since they were, you know,
That's little
funny. Children. Yeah. You know, she asks forgiveness. This is funny. So I don't know what she did. There was something she gave my daughter that had my oldest daughter. Before she went more radical on organic, holistic stuff, I think she used Bomex or something and, you know, the baby cream, you know, that she did.
No, I don't even know what that is. Yeah, I don't have kids.
You know, you were tainted by, you know, whatever, you know. She asked forgiveness for giving her something that had Splenda in it, you know. And we made fun of her on it, you know.
Oh, wow.
But she's a sweetheart. And thank God, a lot of the things that my wife said were, like good for you 10, 15 years ago are now things that are being proven.
Yeah, but, like organic food. Yeah.
And all of those things were, but it's tough in the world and culture. So if somebody is listening and they're struggling with happiness in retirement, what are your tips? I mean, you said spiritual, which was great, family, but family's a tough one because you may not have the best marriage. They may not have the best relationship with their children.
I would say the number one tip is if you're not happy, and I'm not the happiness expert. I've had people, experts on my show, but I would say stop focusing on yourself so much and focus on other, on helping others. And this is why I'm a big believer in volunteering and giving something of yourself. When you give, when you are giving, it's hard to be unhappy. You know, when you are giving something of yourself. And another thing is, if you're having trouble making friends, because that's part of the problem when you get older. It is harder to make friends. You don't have the kids to bring you together. There are programs like, I don't know where, if you listener are, there are, there's this program called Meetup, meetup.com. And I used it a lot in San Diego before we moved to the East Coast. Here we don't need it because we live in a 55 and older community and there's 100 clubs and 100 groups and we can find people, you know, our people. My advice is find your people in person. There's nothing like being in person with somebody, whether that's a group at your church or synagogue, whether that's a hiking group or a bicycling group or a dance club, whatever it is, you need to find your people and make friends. And that's my advice. Don't focus so much on yourself. Focus on other people and make friends with them.
No, that's great. It also reminds me of, I don't know, if pop, you know, meetups, Bitcoin meetups. And I went to these like Bitcoin conferences. Have you ever been to these?
No.
It's fascinating because it's what a generation raised on sort of not believing in God believes in. So when you go to a Bitcoin meetup or even a, like a Tony Robbins convention, it's like an old school revivalist, and instead of God is Bitcoin. And but they get fellowship, like what you'd get in a church. They get community. So I love hanging out with Bitcoiners because we were all hanging out in the middle of COVID, and you'd go to these groups, everybody get COVID, everybody gets sick, and then it was funny. But I think you are right on. I think the way that we are wired is for community and fellowship. People that I talk to are struggling with depression and retirement, it's linked to one or two things. They're alone, maybe they're single, and they don't go to a church. They don't go to a meetup. I think that's a great tip. Like if you're not religious,
yeah,
check a meetup. There's numerous interests, volunteering. People just don't have many friends today. And
yeah,
even me, you think of like how many friends you have. You're lucky if you have one or two good friends in your life. You only have one, you know. It was like my mother was a funny woman, great woman, greatest woman I've ever known. But she, you know, one of her things, which she was sort of like a dark cloud sometimes, and she would be like, the pessimist. And sweetest, nicest woman on earth, but she would, you know, always look at the negative side because she had a lot of hardship, you know. So she would go, you only have one or two friends your whole life. And I'm like, Mom, you know, it's kind of a negative thing. I have, you know, 30 and she's right now, you know, I only have one or two good friends. And it's not when you take away work, when you take away different units. But that's all you need, one or two. And that's the thing. Sometimes you get separated from those one or two and you need to reconnect and you locally. You're absolutely right.
And you can make new friends too. You know,
and you need to hug people. You need
to
touch. You know, yep.
I agree.
We saw this girl and, you know, we went to this restaurant yesterday and we saw this girl. She looked young. She did not look, immunosuppressed. It looked like she was doing the face shield, but it wasn't a clear face shield. It was she was blocking the world.
Huh.
And I think so many people are struggling with anxiety and stuff like that because they're just alone. So I think that's a great tip. What about family changes when people retire? How do you recover and how do you recover from that? People getting...
That's probably a whole nother podcast, which I don't think we have time for. A
couple minutes.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm not a therapist. I'm just a podcaster that got into this because I was interested, right? But yeah, things do change as after you retire. There's one of the reasons why I started the Rocky Retirement Show is because there's a lot of divorce after retirement. You know, people who have been working 8 hours, they come together and they decide they don't like each other anymore. You know, you need to be prepared for certain things. You know, a lot of women retire before their husbands do, and they have full lives because women in general tend to have more friends than men do. You know, we go and we'll have lunch and men might play golf with somebody. And then the man retires and he wants the woman to spend, 8 hours a day with him. And the woman's like, no, I've got my life that I've had before you retired. You need to work it out on your own. And so that can be stressful for couples. These are things that the couples need to talk about before they retire. It's not just financial. It's how are we going to work our lives when we are retired? Are you going to be sitting on the couch watching TV for 8 hours a day, playing on Facebook, arguing with people about politics? For me, that's not me. I don't want to be sitting and arguing with people about politics. So I tend to not even know what's going on in the world. You know, I don't watch the news. My husband loves that stuff. And I say, that's great. He'll bring it up and I'll say, well, you're going to have to explain to me what you're talking about because I don't follow politics anymore. And he'll tell me and I'll tell him what I think. But I try to limit those discussions with him because it's not really something that I want to fill my mind with. You know, so you have to learn how to communicate with your spouse in a way that's still loving, but also sometimes you have to protect your own private space as well so that you don't go crazy because you're living 24 hours a day now with the person, right?
Instead and there's a 24/7 news cycle
where
they're programming us. So I don't know why I bought it. I'm going to get rid of Apple News. You know, it was like all these weird news articles that, now I do not, I was probably like your husband for a while, 2020 election, and not like an anti-Trump or an anti-Biden thing. I just was like, you hear one news story, they lie to you, this station lies to you, this one, and they just tell you what they think they want you to hear for ratings. I'm like, I'm done. So I've not watched cable news on both sides because it would just raise my stress. And I watch like Yankees podcast. I'll do a lot of theology readings and, you know, things that, and trying to work out, but it really, I mean, I have very strong beliefs that I will certain, but it was like, sort of, I don't have a home politically anymore and both sides. So it's like,
I feel the same way. I jumped over to being a libertarian now. So you know, and I don't even believe 100% of what libertarians believe, but it's so like, I just okay, like, whatever.
And then everybody fights and it's like, okay, you know, and then they don't like you anymore. Then they unfriend you on Facebook. It's like,
exactly.
For what? You know, unless I'm running for governor, you know, or something, you know, I unless I can change things, I really will not keep my mouth shut. I'll tell people, like, if there's a political issue, like tax policy, like we live in New Jersey, a high tax state. I don't know why we can't have a 3 or 4% state income tax. It would be bipartisan. There's things like that that I'll talk about, but like, I don't want to get into fights with people that I should like. Or normally, like in the past, if someone was a Republican or Democrat, they kind of kept that to themselves.
Right. And we don't anymore. Now we just kind of, we just lay it all out to everybody, right? It used to be impolite to talk about politics or religion. Yeah. And we don't have those social mores anymore about politeness.
And the reason they had that is so you still like the person when you played bocce with them in the community or went to church with them. So it didn't destroy the whole social fabric. Because I have fun a lot of the times with people that are totally different than me. Like I was talking to this guy before some Jehovah's Witness knocked on my door, you know, one day this week. And I was just talking to him. What do you believe? Okay, what do you, you know, I'm not going to go to your church, but I enjoyed that this guy was that. Some people not like it. They're that sincere that they are literally taking off for days to proselytize you. So they have to like what makes them, I like to learn what makes people tick sometimes. So we learned a little bit about what makes you tick. This was a lot of fun.
It was. Thank you. Thanks for having me come on your show.
Yeah, it was great. And any concluding thoughts that we didn't mention that you think should be mentioned?
Just when you start getting ready to retire, just do your research, look at some of the non-financial aspects of retirement. You can go to rockyourretirement.com or you can go to the podcast and just look at some of the back episodes and, you know, don't jump into retirement just only thinking about finance, because it's a lot more than financial that you'll need to take a look at. That's my advice. Yep.
That's beautiful. And I'm on Rock Your Retirement right now. And I guess two more questions. Pickleball purpose and delights of retirement exploration. I mean, these are great topics. Moving beyond the RV. You know, I have so many clients, they did the RV thing for a year and a half. And then they were like, done.
Yeah.
She was like, my husband was driving me crazy. I love my husband. We're going to be married forever, but I couldn't take it, you know?
Well, what Barbara said, and, you know, I haven't been uploading the podcast to actually the website lately because I looked at it a couple of days ago and I'm like, oh, this is missing a whole bunch of podcasts. But if you go on any of the podcast catchers, you know, you'll see all of the episodes. But Barbara said, in one of the most recent episodes, that after living in her RV for a year, she realized that they could live with a lot less stuff. And when they moved into the 55 and older community that they live in now, she said they were able to get rid of so many more things because they realized they can live with less. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the things that she learned after living in an RV for a year, or however long she lived in it. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, they are. And pickleball, my cousin is like a famous pickleballer. So I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, like if you only invested in pickleball 12 years ago.
I know. It's crazy.
He was talking about how he was doing this thing with basically that pickleball was going to be the next big thing. And it is.
And it is. It is.
And I think it's because it almost fills that societal role that you're talking about. So that's great. Well, thank you so much. It was a lot of fun.
It was. Thank you so much, Josh. I appreciate being on your show. And, you know, thanks again. This was a great time.
Great. Thanks so much.